Anyways, my guest this evening is something different and that I've never really done before, but, you know, I find it to be a very pertinent thing in this day and age and what's going on around us in our world. And my guest is Sheriff Richard Mack, and he is... he's been a sheriff of Graham County, Arizona, and a longtime crusader for freedom and individual rights. Right now, it's vital to that we restore the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. The greatest threat we face today is not terrorists. It is our own federal government. If America is conquered or ruined, it will be from within, not a foreign enemy. So, Richard, Sheriff Mack, are you there?
I am, but I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, you are? Okay, how's that? Is that any better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
Okay, we'll get that up there. Sometimes it's real hard to tell on the levels. So
yeah, that's a lot better.
Okay, great, great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to kind of introduce yourself to our audience to kind of get started on where we go with your pamphlet to the sheriffs?
Well, yeah, I guess it probably a little bit pertinent just to let everybody know I spent 20 years of my adult life in law enforcement. I started out, I really started at the bottom and worked my way up. I started as a meter maid and doing parking enforcement while I was working my way through college, and then... I graduated, got a degree in Latin American Studies, and tried to get in the FBI, and that's what my father retired as, and that never took hold, and at the time, I was really disappointed that I never got in the FBI, and now I'm really grateful that I never did, because it would have led me to a completely different area, would have had a completely different life, and I like the one that I had. And I did enjoy my time in law enforcement, and I appreciate the education that it provided me and for the career it provided me. And but, you know, there's probably not anything in law enforcement that you've ever seen on TV that I haven't done, except maybe, you know, I wasn't a forensics detective like you see on NSI on television and whatnot, but I did the murder investigations and the horrible death scene investigations, and I was a hostage negotiator and worked with the SWAT team on cross training with that. And another thing that's important too is that I didn't get into law enforcement to become a crusader or to fight for individual rights or to stand for the Constitution or anything else. I got into law enforcement pretty much like everybody else, to have fun and to have an exciting career, and to have the high-speed chases were the funnest thing ever. And I really, really enjoyed those, and the big time felony arrests and solving murders and kicking in doors. And but I wanted also understood that I've always been a compassionate person, and I've never been a mean guy or anything like that. You know, in 20 years of law enforcement, I never slugged another human being. I never shot anybody. I never beat anybody up or anything like that. I was never accused of police brutality or excessive force. I always prided myself that I'd rather talk somebody into jail than beat them into jail. And, you know, there's always a risk with that, that I might get hurt. And, you know, there's just no need for it. And these videotapes that appear on television and on the news about officers beating a handcuffed subject or shooting a handcuffed subject just absolutely make me sick. And the Rodney King beating made me sick. And officers trying to justify stuff like that even makes me sicker. And I think the overall message that I learned in law enforcement is that the oath of office is meaningless. It's just a ceremony, and officers go through the motions of taking an oath of office to uphold and defend and obey the United States Constitution and the state constitution wherein they work, but it really doesn't mean anything, and most have never even read either one.
It's not even required.
You know, officers are there basically to write tickets and make arrests and bring in money for the city and county and state.
So you're saying that that's not even required to study the Constitution or Bill of Rights?
Oh, no, of course not. No, that's... when I attended the FBI Academy in 1992, I was invited to what they call the FBI National Academy, which is there for police agencies and sheriff's offices nationwide to send some of their officers and administrators. And I took a class while I was there called Constitutional Law. And it never once got into any of the basics. In fact, the instructor the very first day said we were going to bypass the basics. So do you know what we really studied?
No.
We studied case law. We studied cases that went before the Supreme Court that have anything to do with, you know, the Miranda warning or search and seizure. But, you know, bypassing the basics leaves no foundation. And the police officers in this country have been trained without a fundamental American foundation. And I think that's a huge part of the problem.
Yeah, that has to have been on purpose.
Probably. I don't know. You know, in law enforcement, they say that there are no accidents. So I don't know. The bottom line on all of that is that it's easy to recognize, I think, if anybody will take a serious look at our country, it's easy to recognize that we're way off track, that we do not follow the Constitution anymore. And my question to law enforcement is, don't we own part of that problem? If the rest of the country is off track and our government's off track and out of control, then what's our role in that? And where do we come in? I think we're smart enough and sensitive enough, I would hope, as police officers in this country to recognize that we've been part of the problem, that we have to change what we've been doing over the last 50 years in law enforcement and realize that we need to change our ways. And for instance, the wholesale distribution of traffic tickets and radar tickets especially are immoral, and they have nothing to do with public safety and everything to do with tax collection. And that's what the police officers in this country have been reduced to, and I'm sorry to say it, but it's the truth. And there was an article this week on the internet about the Detroit officers and in the Detroit area and Michigan area, because the economy is so bad, the officers have been required to write more tickets. And just who are they getting that money from? People who are out of work, who have lost their jobs, and yet we continue to raise their taxes, write more tickets on their backs, and peace officers just walk away thinking, oh, well, that's okay. Well, you know, my supervisors told me to do that. We need to exercise our own moral judgment and make sure that what we're doing is in line with our oath of office and in line with American fundamentalism. And if we're not supporting the cause of freedom, then we're supporting the cause of slavery. And it's getting a little bit too much for me to take anymore that peace officers in this country think that just following orders is okay.
Well, they don't even term it peace officer anymore, do they?
Do they what?
They don't even term them as peace officers anymore, do they?
No, not very often. But I mean, you'll find a token here and there. Like most state bureaucracies that oversee certification for police officers is called POST, which is Peace Officers Standard and Training. And so, you know, if everybody in this country tomorrow who got a traffic ticket would take it to court and fight it, there wouldn't be enough court time to handle even a fraction of those cases. You know, the cases would probably have to be dismissed because they wouldn't be scheduled until next year. And so the right to a speedy trial would be negated. So it's just getting so ridiculous. And now we have photo radar and photo red lights, and machines are taking the place of our police officers. And it's just mind-boggling how far we're letting this go. And the law enforcement community wants everybody to believe that everything's just fine with that, and that as long as you're enforcing the laws, then you're exempt from any moral responsibility. And I don't think anything's further from the truth.
Do you guys, did the police have to take an ethics course?
They usually do. There's usually police ethics courses, and I've even taught those before.
But it still doesn't address the Constitution, I just find.
No.
They take an oath to it. How do they know what they're taking an oath to?
They don't care.
Amazing.
Quite frankly, I would love to find any police agency that has ever done some significant training anywhere associated with the oath of office. It just doesn't happen. And I would love for anybody to prove me wrong. I mean, I'd love to be wrong on a lot of this. But I say the same thing about my booklet, which brought us together tonight. If anybody can prove anything wrong or incorrect or erroneous in that book, I will personally send them a letter of apology, remove it from the book after I eat that page.
Well, get into this book a little bit. Talk about it.
Okay.
Tom, bring me the book.
My mom. Okay, I'm sorry. I was getting my wife to get me my copy of the book that I have here handy. In fact, my mom was just reading my book, and I was going to have her tell you so your audience would know that she got chills while she was reading it.
Well, it's just refreshing to hear, you know,
okay,
that someone with a positive attitude.
Anyway,
about
she reminded me that she hadn't read it after it got finished. She was reading some of the rough drafts for me and helping me proofread it, but let's see, she got to page 35, and she said, man, I was getting chills reading your book. And the first part of the book, of course, is the introduction, which is in most books, but there's something there that I think everybody needs to understand and hear. The deal with this book is that it's dealing with political correctness, and I don't want there to be any mistake. And so I'll read this sentence from the book.
Okay, first it's the county sheriff, America's last hope.
Yeah, and you can get it at sheriffmac.com. And it starts, the very first paragraph towards the bottom reads thus: "Let us not be deceived. The political whining for universal health care, gun control, forced equality through governmental redistribution of wealth, and the removal of religious beliefs and expressions from our public institutions all come directly from the Marxist platform." And of course, just so there's no mistake there, Karl Marx, who created the Marxist platform, the Marxist platform is the origination of communism, something that we fought two world wars to stop, and supposedly that's why we went to Korea and Vietnam, was to stop communism. Of course, I don't believe any of that now, but the very things that we have fought world wars and other wars to prevent is what we are now embracing in America as the new political correctness. And so the next paragraph deals with something I also want everybody to understand, that the Founding Fathers warned us not to do just about everything that we're doing in our country today. And Thomas Jefferson warned, when all government shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks provided and will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated. And then the question I have for the reader and for everyone else in the country, especially for county sheriffs, is that when government becomes venal and oppressive, as President Jefferson so firmly warned us about, who will stand in the way? Who will prevent that? Whose job is it? Whose responsibility, Melody, is it to stop venal and oppressive government? Is it just the people? Should we just leave it to the people? I know, let's just have the people, they should get a lawyer and sue and stop the horrible government from making them a slave. Maybe we should get people to sue the IRS, which will cost them about 5 to 10 years of their lives and everything they own, to only stop an injustice that should have been stopped in the first place, and that they should have never had to go through in the first place. And yet, are you telling me that the sheriff who's in charge of protecting and defending his constituents and his people and the voters within his county that gave him this job, that he'll go ahead and let government ruin their lives, take their property, confiscate their bank accounts, and sometimes their children, and leave people destitute, and he'll look back and say, you know what, but we sure got a lot of drug arrests this month. It simply cannot be justified.
It's just refreshing to hear that somebody's paying attention and is willing to speak out on this, go ahead.
To me, it was hard not to, because this whole thing hit me over the head like a 2x4, and I've asked people the same thing. How many times do we have to get hit over the head with the baseball bat of Washington, D.C. corruption before we realize that what's going on is wrong and that we need to do something? And that's another thing I state emphatically in the book, that if you think that the tyrants of Washington, D.C. are going to stand and stop tyranny, that's like saying Washington, D.C. is going to stop spending. It's not going to happen. And like I say in the book, if you think that's going to happen, then I've got beachfront property for you in Omaha. It's just absurd for anyone to think that. And so where do we turn? Well, you turn at the local level, where government's supposed to be the most responsive to the people. And should we not be able to, as a people, in our respective counties across this country, expect that the person who took an oath to uphold and defend, protect and preserve the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the state would stand and do just that? Why wouldn't we expect him to do it? He's voted in to do that. We hired him to do that, and he's promised to do that, and he is the ultimate law authority in the county. The President of the United States cannot tell your sheriff what to do. Were you aware of that?
I'm aware of it, but I'm just wondering how many of them are aware of it.
Yeah, well, that's why I wrote the book. So here it is, and I think it's time to get this book to everyone. And every one of your listeners, who wherever they're listening, on the Internet or wherever, go to www.sheriffmack.com, order the book. If you don't want to do PayPal, if you don't want to use a credit card, there's a P.O. box on there. You can send me a check or money order or cash. And actually, I prefer silver. Now, why would I prefer silver?
Well, it's actual money.
Yeah, it's real money. Yeah, that's the easy answer. Yeah, that's correct. I prefer real money. If you're out of real money, or if you don't have any real money, I'll take FRNs or Federal Reserve notes, but I really prefer silver. So if you send me an ounce of silver, I'll send you 2 books. And I don't care how much the silver cost you. Hopefully you got it way back when it was $5 to $6 or $7. I remember buying some silver not too long ago for $7 an ounce. But so if you want more than two books, that's great. But you can get three for about 20 plus a little bit of shipping. But I really recommend that you, this is one time that you can't stand on the sidelines and cheering for others who might be defending your rights and defending freedom. We all have got to get involved, and everybody can do a little bit. And there's no play here. There's no ploy. This isn't a sales pitch to get people to contribute their life savings to some.
Well, it's an inexpensive book that gives you some vital information.
Yeah, it's a small book, and it's an easy read. And like I say, you can get two for an ounce of silver. You can get two for, almost three for $20 or 24, whatever it is, on the Internet. Just check that out. Go to Sheriff Mack, and Sheriff is one R and two Fs. Mack is M-A-C-K. So go to sheriffmack.com, and you can get those there. Or just write me at that address, and then we'll mail you out some of the books. But again, I prefer silver, and if you can do silver, a lot of people have done it, and I appreciate that, because what does the Constitution require about our monetary system? Is that our monetary system be based on gold and silver, and I prefer real money. Why? Because that's what the Constitution says, and I try to follow it as best I can.
Well, first of all, the most blatantly part that's sticking out is if none of them have read, required to read the Constitution, how are we going to hold them to it?
Well, we do. You see, that's the thing. We need to start that. The people are in charge here. And, say that you live in a small county in Texas where there's only, 10, 20,000 people or so. There's counties across America that are smaller than that. The people in those types of counties possess a great deal of power. You get a few hundred people that support this, and they want their sheriffs to be trained in their constitutional responsibilities. That carries a lot of weight. But again, I will ask your listeners this. Do you expect your sheriffs to do this without support from their constituents? You can't ask them to do something that you don't already know or believe in yourself. And so this is why this book is meant for everybody. Just like my mother was reading it tonight and she was getting chills, that's what it's supposed to do. It will give you chills because that's what the truth does. And this will touch your hearts. And I believe that if we get this in front of the right sheriffs, if you get the truth in front of the right people, they'll usually do the right thing. And I'm doing seminars across the country. Next week, a week from today, I'll be speaking in Michigan, up in the Upper Peninsula, and that's also advertised on my website.
That's not up where the Greg.
And then after that, I go to Ohio, and then after that, I go to Pennsylvania. And then, I really hope somebody gets me out in Hawaii real soon, too. But it is, Melody, a time for us to turn the clock back. We've got to change the country in the way we think that it's okay to spend ourselves into oblivion. What's going on in our country right now is extremely dangerous, and we live in such perilous times because we're headed for a real catastrophe. And I'm afraid that that catastrophe is going to come with a lot of strings attached to it, and like martial law and a few other things that really have me concerned, where the federal government's going to try to take control. And we're really going to need sheriffs who are able and courageous and knowledgeable enough to stand against such tyranny and such moves. And they need to do it preemptively. We need to be proactive with this, and we need to get sheriffs together in their states, and sheriffs need to get together and say, you know what, we need to write a letter and let the federal government know, write the White House and Senate and Congress, and maybe CC it over to the Justice Department and to the Homeland Security and to FEMA, that we will be taking care of ourselves, and that don't come in here ever thinking that you're going to take over, and if we need you, we'll call you. But if we don't call you, you're to stay out. And just flat out, that's how it needs to be.
Well,
and I have lots of stories that have happened to show that the federal government does not want to fight with the sheriffs. I guarantee you, they do not want to squabble, fight, argue, or be any way crossways with the sheriffs of this country. There's only one person in the county that has the authority, the power, and the historical backing to call out the militia, or the posse, as it were. And that's the sheriff. And that's one of the reasons why you can document that he is the most powerful law enforcement agent in his county. And, you know, one thing that I think should really shock and if not depress most of your listeners and most of the people in this country. Now, you might not know this because I researched it, but looking at the budget, the federal budget that right now that Obama has proposed for our country, do you know what the federal budget was in 1989, President Ronald Reagan's last year in office? That's 20 years ago.
Is that the one
you
that they actually tell
was?
Us? Is that,
well, I'm going to tell you, but okay. I would be curious as to if you knew or anybody of your listeners want to email it to us or anything else. In fact, your listeners can email us anytime with their questions if they'd like. Is that what you usually do?
Well, that's what I've got here is at khen.dj@gmail.com. They can email any questions.
Okay. Well, if you know, and I'll probably answer the question before any of them can get in and research that and get that in here. But just let me tell you, this is one of my favorite anecdotes that I like to tell when I'm giving my speeches, because it puts it in perspective just how far our federal government has gone out of control. In 1989, the federal budget was right around $450 billion.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was a lot. But today, you know what it is now, don't you?
It should be in the trillions, isn't it?
It is. It's $3.7 trillion. And in my speeches, I said, I think that's a 700% increase. That's actually 800. Really close to 800% increase.
And that's the one that they tell us about, because they have a black budget, too, do they not?
Well, they're going to spend more than that. In fact, they've already got... If you looked at everything that the federal government has committed to spend, it's more like up in the $30 to $35 trillion.
Wow!
So yeah, but the actual operational budget for the U.S. government is right now at $3.7 trillion. The debt on that right now is about $10 trillion. When I wrote the book, I put $8 trillion, and I only wrote the book about 4 months ago.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, the federal budget debt has gone up about $2 trillion just since I wrote the book. So, you know, that's how fast it's all going. But it's crazy to think that our budget for this government has increased 700 to 800% in 20 years. Boy, if you could invest in government, we'd all be millionaires, you know, because that's one thing you know is going to increase. 700 to 800%, please give me a break. And everybody thinks that's okay, and all these throngs and mobs of people are following these politicians around, and it's not just Barack Obama. We're following these politicians around when they have an approval rating of like 17%, and nobody agrees that Congress knows what they're doing, then why do we keep reelecting these people? You know, I find it absolutely astonishing. And maybe that, yeah, I'm sure there's vote fraud. I know there's vote fraud. And maybe that's the only way these people keep getting into office. But it's sickening how the money just goes from us to Washington, D.C., over to Wall Street and AIG and other companies, and then they send back contributions and donations to the same lying, hypocrite politicians in Washington, D.C., and the circle of money just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the cesspool of corruption keeps getting bigger and bigger, and we Americans keep paying for this, and now we've mortgaged the future of our children and our grandchildren, and we think everything's okay, and we don't have to do anything different. Well, if we don't do anything different, we're in for a catastrophe that's going to make the Great Depression look like a kindergarten recess. And it's time to do something different. So I say my message has been, law enforcement, let's start with us. And let's let everybody know, in this county, in our jurisdiction, there will be no, absolutely no, violations of the Constitution that will be tolerated whatsoever. We won't allow it. The sheriffs will train their deputies in the Constitution and in their constitutional responsibilities and in police ethics, in actually keeping your oath of office, and that it's something that's meaningful, and it's really the thing that's only important with law enforcement. True protection comes from keeping our oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, the thing that's there to protect liberty. And so, you know, that's where I stand. And again, the book is simple to read. You can read it in about 25, 30 minutes. And I always kind of joke that sheriff or officer, you can read it while you eat your next donut.
You have some anecdotal little bit of stories in there about, you know, some of your experiences in your life, and I saw where you had worked with the Boulder County Sheriff's Office in Colorado.
No, actually, that's the foreword written by Officer Fred Willoughby.
Oh, okay. I missed. Yeah. Oh, I see what that. Okay.
Officer Fred Willoughby is a good friend of mine. He was in law enforcement about 45, 50 years, actually.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I wanted him to write the foreword. And he lives in Salt Lake City, and we've crossed paths several times, and he agrees totally. He agrees that law enforcement need to study the Constitution.
And well, if the sheriff's not upholding the Constitution, who do they expect, who else is going to?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's almost like we're doing something more important for you. We're not going to uphold and defend the Constitution. We're going to write tickets and arrest druggies instead. So don't bother me with that oath of office stuff, okay? We're busy, you know, and for... That's really the attitude that we're seeing from law enforcement, and especially administrators in law enforcement. And I find that attitude absolutely shocking.
Do you find the training different from when you first went in to be a peace officer as opposed to what they're doing now for training?
A little bit, yeah. It's evolved. It's getting a little bit more them against us. You know, it's getting more aimed at, you know, everybody's out to get a cop, and we better be equipped. We better have all the toys, the tasers. You know, if cops are given toys, they're going to use them, or they're going to play with them.
I saw,
and I've actually heard cops say stuff like, I can't wait to get that new taser, and I can't wait to try it out on somebody. You know, and it's just such a them against us mentality that, you know, you're just creating an atmosphere that's conducive to police brutality. And it's no wonder to me. I mean, every time I see these videos of officers mistreating people or beating people or shooting people when they shouldn't, it's an absolute result and consequence of the training that these officers have had. You know, there's very little training that goes along with the line that 90% of the people we come in contact with in our communities have never committed a crime and don't intend to. And that's really, I think, where we should focus our energy, on the 90% that are good, honest people. And even of the other 10%, there's only a small fraction of that that mean to do any harm to peace officers. Yes, we need to be aware of the potential threats out there, but we also need to be more aware of our responsibility to protect and serve the people that are honest, law-abiding citizens. And that the other thing that really concerned me in law enforcement was the win-loss records that police officers would brag about. You know, I haven't lost a court case in 10 years, or I haven't lost a court case in 3 years, or I'm 99% still victorious in court. And that's even worse with prosecutors. Prosecutors really keep tabs of their win-loss records. And that's more important to them than truth or justice. Can you imagine a prosecutor that works for the by, for, and of the people that's more concerned with his personal career and his win-loss record than he is actually to achieve justice? The court system today is not out for truth or justice. It is out to make a point, to send a message, and to win. It is all about winning. It's not about justice.
How about the blending
and that
of,
really concerns me as well.
How about the blending of the military? Are you real familiar with that?
Now, what about the military?
Blending of the military with the local law enforcement.
Yeah, that's been a problem, and I don't think that's nearly as big a problem as what some people think. I think it's getting a little bit a lot of play and on the internet, but I don't believe it's happening nearly as much as what some of the rumors are trying to portray. But it's definitely out there. It's definitely happening, and it is definitely something that concerns me. I mean, face it, the posse comitatus laws say, no, you can't do that. Hang on a second. I'm going to switch phones. My other one phone's dying.
Okay. While I'm at it, I'll just do something here a little bit early here while we're waiting on him, and this is support.
All right. I'm okay now.
All right. Well, let's go back then. Okay.
See?
All right.
So, but, yeah, am I concerned about that? And yet, let me say this about every potential conspiracy theory. And you know, and I have some very good friends that have been way into the conspiracy theory things. Let's go back to one of the original conspiracy theories, which would be the JFK assassination.
Uh-huh.
I don't buy any of it. I don't buy anything the Warren Commission put out on that. I was about 11 years old when this happened, and it was extremely traumatic for me. I liked JFK back then. I was just a very impressionable young boy, and when he died, I went and bought all any paraphernalia to do with him. I went and bought it. I have these old albums that had his speeches on them and his famous inauguration speech, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. I used to listen to that over and over. I've written about that statement too for Democrats. You know, isn't it kind of funny or ironic or hypocritical for Democrats to have their icon, John F. Kennedy, tell them that people shouldn't be having their handout towards government, that we should be asking what we can do for government, not asking government to take care of our health care or feed us or clothe us or give us a job or bail us out or anything else, you know. And so the point with all this, though, is I don't need to be any more scared than I am right now, and I'll compare it to this. There's all sorts of conspiracy theories out there, and I'll tell you right now, there is no question in my mind that there are secret societies and secret combinations that are promoting a new world order, a one world government, that are without any question, and you can label it whatever you want, one world, a new world order, or one world order, or globalism, or skulls and bones, or whatever else. I don't trust any of that stuff. I didn't trust Clinton, and I didn't trust Bush, and I certainly don't trust Obama. But I don't trust the people who got them there even more. But take all the conspiracy theories, no matter what it is, chemtrails and capitalized names and on and on and on. I don't care. The truth behind 9/11, so on and so forth. I mean, whatever conspiracy theory is out there, and I'm not discounting them at all. Don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting any of them. However, I think we need to stay and remain focused on one key thing that scares me the most. And none of these other conspiracy theories will ever scare me or worry me or motivate me any more than what I know for a fact. And the fact remains that we do not have a constitutional republic in this country anymore, and that the foundational documents and ideals no longer apply in this country, and that the very officials who have promised to protect and defend and uphold our way of government in this country, the freest country ever in the history of mankind, those very officials are the ones who have destroyed our blueprint for freedom in this country. Our Constitution is null and void, doesn't exist, and pragmatically has been destroyed. Can we get it back? Yes, I believe we can, and that's what I've dedicated my life to. But I don't need to be scared by any other conspiracy theory more than what is, I know, is not a theory, is not a conspiracy, and has been a result of a conspiracy. But I don't care what you call it. I don't care what you label it as. All I know is that it has happened, and that our Constitution is dead. It's gone. And the form of government that we were supposed to have in this government and this country has been replaced, and it has been replaced by a democratic dictatorship of political correctness. And I will do everything until I die to get our Constitution back, and thus, by so doing, we'll take America back. And I don't know any better way to bring back our Constitution and our freedom and God-given American liberty than by having the sheriffs who have promised to stand for our Constitution to do exactly that. That's what my book is about. That's what I believe the inspiration behind the book is about. And I believe that every citizen in this country should read it and get one for their sheriff, and I hope that every sheriff in this country receives about 5 or 6 of them. By the time he gets the 5th or 6th copy, he's going to go, you know what? There must be a lot of people in my county, a lot of my constituents that really want me to read this. And maybe this guy who actually won a case at the United States Supreme Court, which I did, while he was sheriff, probably the only time in the history of our country that a couple of sheriffs sued the federal government and won. And in particular, against Bill Clinton. We actually sued Bill Clinton and lived to tell about it. Go figure.
I wonder how many of them know what's behind that statement.
Well, Well, if you believe in those conspiracies, then you know that there's been hundreds of people that have fallen by the wayside that were close to him. And that's another one, conspiracy number 59. Vince Foster. That was probably the most poorly disguised murder in the history of our country. And yet, of course, there are pundits on television that will tell you, and law enforcement authorities that have been in law enforcement longer than I have, that will say, oh, for heaven's sakes, that was not, what are all these conspiracy nuts doing now? Vince Foster committed suicide, and that was all there was to it. But I'll tell you, the next time I see that guy on television that wrote a book about the JFK assassination being Lee Harvey Oswald, I'll tell him to his face that he's nothing but a liar. And I'll tell any law enforcement officer that gets up there and tries to tell me all these other things, that we're out to lunch when it comes to what's going on in our country. Well, I'll tell them, too, that being paid to lie is nothing more than being a prostitute. And if they want to prostitute themselves, that's fine. But I'm not going to go back on what I know is true. And it would be very easy in a court of law for me to prove what I have said on your show so far, especially the part that our Constitution has no place in this country, has been killed by our own public officials. And that starts at the local level, too. But I believe that a lot of it has been an evolution that a lot of people, if they come face-to-face with what I'm saying, with reality and the truth, will go, oh, yeah, good gosh, you know. And so even if you look at the First Amendment, that says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And the rule there is that the federal government cannot intermeddle with religion, and they cannot force you to belong to the Church of England
or to pay tithes. Isn't that what 501c3s are?
And that's exactly my point. Then why do we have churches that have to become 501c3 and cannot say certain things or they lose their tax-exempt status? That's completely and entirely against the Constitution. The IRS has no right to be in existence in the first place, and now they've gone so far as to say which churches can and cannot say certain things, and which churches will lose their tax-exempt status.
So they're using the IRS as an enforcement arm, then.
Oh yeah, as a political hitman, and Richard Nixon did that with the IRS. Richard Nixon would have his enemies audited and investigated by the IRS, and attacked and abused and victimized by the IRS. Others have used the FBI for the same thing. Bill Clinton did that with the FBI. Some FBI agents actually refused, but there was a guy in the FBI who actually wrote a book about the illegal tactics of Bill Clinton doing that. I can't remember what the name of that book was, but
was it Larry? I can't think of his name.
Yeah,
it slipped my mind.
Anyway, my mom had that book here, and I read part of it. And you know, for anybody to think that these federal agencies haven't been misused haven't victimized the innocent citizens. I mean, that's just absurd. In 1998, Jennifer Long testified before Congress. Another IRS agent testified behind a partition where his voice was scrambled and his ID was held so that he would be protected. Protected from what? From our own government? And he was so afraid of retaliation from the IRS that he would not testify unless he did so anonymously. And yet, what happened to the IRS after all these agents testified about the IRS committing crimes? Not doing just wrong things or making mistakes. Literally committing crimes, fabricating evidence against people they knew could not afford to defend themselves. Can you imagine? Did we dissolve the IRS after that? Did we abolish the IRS? Did we fire anybody? Did we conduct any criminal investigations against agents or supervisors who allowed that or did that? Not one. You know what they did after that? They, this is pretty funny if it wasn't so sick. They actually, after those hearings, they required the IRS to open offices on Saturdays and to be more user-friendly. That's like telling the mafia to be more user-friendly. You know? But I actually trust the mafia a little bit more because at least you know who you're dealing with there. The IRS claims to be serving the people. I've actually heard some IRS agents say that or testify to that, that we're here to serve the people of America. Yeah. Yeah, and the Gestapo was doing the same thing in Germany.
Yeah. Well, you know, you say to, you know, to get these books to the sheriffs, but, you know, what about to the police chiefs and that sort? I mean, don't they, do they work together at all in any way?
Well, they do, and in my book, that's probably one little mistake I made in the book, is that I aim at mostly sheriffs. But there was one time in the book where I make sure I said police and sheriffs. And it is for police and sheriffs, and it's for anybody who's taken an oath to uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution. We all need to keep that oath. But the reason I concentrate on the sheriff is because he is the ultimate authority in the county. And I hope that he would work with the chief of police and the other police departments within his county to do this and to rally them behind this. And each one of them has a moral responsibility to keep their oath of office. I will never claim to exempt anyone from that. Every peace officer in this country has a responsibility to keep his oath. I admit it. This case, or this book, resurrects my case against the federal government, where I won at the U.S. Supreme Court. And again, I'll say that. I mean, how many sheriffs have sued the federal government and won a case at the U.S. Supreme Court? I mean, that would be a great historical question to ask a law student. Find that out, because I know it hasn't happened except once in the last 20 years that I'm aware of, and I would say, I would bet that it's only happened once, and that was with the Prince-Mack decision in 1997. And for any sheriff to say, oh yeah, the only sheriff that's ever sued the federal government and won, I don't need to learn anything from him. There's nothing he can tell me.
Let me give the station ID, and I want you to get into that a little bit more. Okay, and this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. Community supported radio, and we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest, it's listed at www.givemesometruth.info, or it's linked to the khen.org website. So, and my guest this evening is Sheriff Richard Mack. Okay, go ahead and tell us a little bit about this. What's behind this suit and how you got into it?
Well, it was a lawsuit that I filed against the Brady Bill, and the Brady Bill forced me to participate in a federal gun control scheme. And while I was sheriff, we had a contract with the Federal Bureau of Prisons to house some of their inmates, and it was quite a lucrative deal. We made about $1 million a year, allowing the federal government to put some of their overflow into our jail. And we had to negotiate the rate, and the county officers had to look at this, and the attorney for the county attorney had to go over the contract, and I signed it, and the Board of Supervisors signed it, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons signed it. And I think I even remember the lady director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I think her last name was Hawk. And boy, that was 15 years ago. And so what alarmed me is that now, instead of negotiating with the sheriffs, the Congress made a law and called the Brady Bill that required and conscripted, literally just came out to the sheriffs of this country and said, sheriffs, this is what you will do because we said so. And you will conduct background checks on every individual in your county who wishes to purchase a handgun. And if you don't do it, we'll arrest you. And I'm telling you the truth. That was all in the Brady Bill. Whoever knowingly fails to comply with these provisions is subject to $1,000 fine, a year in jail, or both. And I certainly was going to knowingly fail to comply. And so the Brady Bill was signed into law in November of 1993 by Bill Clinton. It went into effect February 28, 1994. And that very day is when I filed my lawsuit in federal district court in Tucson, Arizona. And then Sheriff Prince from Montana filed his lawsuit in district court in Montana about 5 or 6 weeks later. And he and I and another few sheriffs also joined the lawsuit from across the country. None from Colorado, I might add. There was only one from Texas. But as absolutely onerous and draconian and filthy wrong this Brady Bill was, I'm really surprised that out of over 3,000 sheriffs in this country, only seven ended up being part of this lawsuit. And then when we filed the lawsuit, we won at the district court level, and Judge John Roll said that Congress exceeded its authority and that the Brady Bill was definitely unconstitutional, and that the federal government has no authority to conscript or mandate what any sheriff in this country does. And that's what I was claiming all along. And when it says the federal government, that means the President of the United States cannot tell your sheriff what to do. And if the President doesn't have the authority to tell me what to do, then the EPA doesn't, the IRS doesn't, the FBI doesn't. And this case made it very clear that the responsibility of local governments is to protect citizens from federal incursions. It said over and over that the states are not subject to federal direction. Does anybody get that? We're not subject to federal direction. But James Madison said, and was quoted by Scalia in this decision over and over, that local officials and state legislatures are to erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority or the federal government, and that hence a double security arises to the rights of the people, because that each government will protect itself and control itself, and at the same time protect the people from incursions of either government being out of control. And that's why we have state governments, to make sure that the federal government does what it's supposed to do. The federal government didn't form this country. The states formed a central government because they wanted to make sure that there was a few things that were done as a country. But the states remained sovereign, and they surrendered a few rights to the federal government so that they could get a few things done nationally. But the 10th Amendment states emphatically that anything outside the constitutional provisions allowed to the federal government belong to the people or to the states, respectively. And so basically, this is what the Founding Fathers said in the 10th Amendment. Federal government, if you think ever there's something that we forgot, you can't do that either. And that's really the intent of the 10th Amendment. And so our case literally dusted off the 10th Amendment, restored sovereignty and the authority to states and local officials, and once again, I'll repeat, the federal government has no authority whatsoever to conscript or tell, force, mandate what the states must be doing or any of their officials. And I wonder if everybody gets that, because it doesn't seem like anybody does, or it's very rare. But people are starting to wake up, Melody. And I believe that we're going to start a peaceful revolution, and I do believe in that. I believe that we must exhaust every peaceful means within our control to get our country back. And I do not want to be a part of a violent overthrow of our government. That's not what I'm about. But make no mistake, we mean no harm to any individual or federal agent or federal officer or towards any person anywhere in this country. We mean you no harm. But make no mistake about it, we will not surrender. We will not give up. We will not accept any more violations of the Constitution. We will not give up any of our rights. We're not giving up our guns. We will not register our guns. We will not take any more licenses from the federal government. This is what has to be done in order for you to keep your rights or to keep your guns. Just leave us alone, and everything will be fine.
How does the sheriff come in with the militia?
Well, the militia is the posse, and he's the only person in the county that can call out the militia. And so posse or militia, they're the same thing. And historically, he's always had that power, and most states will show statutorily that he still has that authority. It certainly says it in Arizona. It says it in Utah. But even if the statutes don't say it, the sheriff still is the ultimate authority in his county. And my book proves it. And again, I challenge anybody to read the book, and you'll see. And if I'm wrong anywhere, please point it out to me. But it's well documented. And even in the documentation, it's very simple. The only thing I use for documentation is my Supreme Court ruling against the federal government, Mac versus U.S., and the Constitution itself, the Declaration of Independence, and a little bit the Gettysburg Address. That's it. That's the references for this book. And again, I invite anybody to disprove anything, and if they'll point that out to me, I'll be happy to eat that page, and then I'll remove it and apologize.
So with the regulations they're doing with the ammunition and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's why I said all that. That's why I said we're not going to register our ammunition. We're not going to put serial numbers out here on our ammunition. And the federal government, BATF, the sheriffs are going to be watching you. If you come in and try to force that idiotic regulation on anybody, the sheriffs, you're going to answer to the sheriff. And that's what the sheriffs need to let them know right up front. We're not going to put up with any of that.
Are you getting a lot of good response from other sheriffs?
Yeah, so far. There was a sheriff in Alabama who has my same last name, Mac, and he ordered one of the books. And there's another sheriff in Idaho who's asked for my books, and they're right now trying to get an opportunity for me to appear at the Idaho Sheriff's Association. I just spoke at Winsboro, Texas, and Fredericksburg, Texas, and the sheriffs were there. I'm speaking with Ron Paul tomorrow on the phone to schedule some speaking engagements with him. They're trying to get us together to speak at a rally in Austin, Texas. And this really needs to take hold. I hope to get on some other national TV shows. I'm trying to get on Glenn Beck right now. And I'll be on anybody's show. I don't care. I'll be on anybody's show. I don't care how liberal or conservative or whatever. I'll be happy. I'd be happy to talk to a group of people who don't believe what I'm saying. That's fine. I would rather talk to people who don't believe, because I know I can at least get some of those people to thinking and to realize that we're off track. How hard is that to say? I mean, that's not rocket science. You know, I think I've been some places that are kind of unique. And again, I'll even say, how many sheriffs do you know in the history of our country that have sued the federal government and won a case at the U.S. Supreme Court? And yet, that case was pretty much, not pretty much, it was almost entirely hidden from the public when we won. Now, I'll be the first one to admit, I got lots of press about this all the way up until the time the victory happened. And CBS News put me up in a hotel in Tucson so they could get my immediate reaction. But quite honestly, CBS, NBC, ABC never said anything that was a direct quote from this ruling.
Huh.
Never. What did it really do? Well, they put out that that Sarah Brady and her gang all thought that this was just simply a token victory for the NRA. A token victory for the NRA, and that it really changed nothing. And indeed, Janet Reno, as soon as we were victorious, issued a memo to every police agency and sheriff's office in this country asking them to continue on as if this case never happened, because it changed nothing. And so,
in other words, it sounds to me like, the, in a sense, if it hadn't been the incident with Mr. Brady, then it would have been something else they would have set up to try to break that.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, and there was actually 5 Brady bills scheduled, one to be passed each year after the other for 5 years in a row. And so I will brag about this, because we changed history in this country. We stopped. Our lawsuit literally stopped Brady Bills 2, 3, 4, and 5. And Brady Bill 1 was ruled unconstitutional, but only parts of it. And they call it the severability clause. So the entire Brady Bill wasn't thrown out. And what we were doing as sheriffs, the part we were required to do that were no longer required after our victory, but certainly a lot of sheriffs and other police personnel went along voluntarily until the National Insta-Check replaced what we were doing. And so now the FBI is in charge of the Brady Bill, and they do the Brady Bill checks through their National Insta-Check program and computer program. But all that's still unconstitutional, and they're not allowed to keep records on people buying handguns, but they have, and they do, and they know they do. And it's all wrong, it's all unconstitutional, all un-American, and you know, people say, well, how are we going to keep guns away from wrong people? Well, that's not my problem. That's not the honest American who wishes to buy a handgun. That's not his problem. He does not have to give up his rights, and he doesn't have to go through all the cattle chutes and participate in any of your gun control measures because we have a problem with keeping guns away from criminals. That's your crime investigation problem. And it's okay for law enforcement officers in this country to go by the rules and quit going, well, this would be a lot easier if we didn't have the Constitution in our way. Well, no duh. But you know what? It was put there for a reason. And I promised that I would obey it. I'll try to circumvent it. And, you know, Melody, let me tell you something. Do you know what a constitutional sheriff really looks like? That's really what I'm advocating. That's really what I'm preaching here, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I don't want you to think I'm picking on you, but you're the only one on the other end of the phone.
Right.
Okay? And when I say, do you know, I'm really saying that to everybody in this country, but do we really know? Can we put that in perspective? What does a constitutional sheriff look like? Well, let me put it this way. Back in 1959, there was a lady arrested because she didn't want to sit at the back of the bus and give up her seat on a bus for a white man. Of course, you know her name.
Uh-huh.
Rosa Parks. And I think she's an American hero. And I really wished I could have met her and shook her hand before she died. And I came close a couple of times, but it never happened, and I really wished I would have. Because Rosa Parks taught us what we do with stupid laws. We disobey them. We stand against them.
There are thousands of
those now. We don't hire a lawyer and go to court, okay? Sometimes that might happen, and that's what I did on the Brady Bill. But I really wished I hadn't. And in retrospect, the sheriffs of this state and in this country should have just written a letter back to Congress and the White House saying the Brady Bill isn't going to be effective in our counties and in the state of Arizona. We're sorry, but we're not having anything to do with it. You can't tell us what to do. And if you don't like it, well, throw your popsicle down in the dirt and run home and tell your mama. Because there's nothing they could have done about it at all if we had refused to go along with the Brady Bill. And that's really what the sheriffs in this country should have done. And I asked the sheriffs in Arizona to do that, but nobody wanted to do that. So I sued. But this is really what a constitutional sheriff looks like. When Rosa Parks broke the law, this wasn't just a tradition, as you well know, Melody. This wasn't a tradition. This was the law. Blacks sit at the back. There were signs posted. Blacks sit at the back. Blacks cannot use white people's water fountain or white restaurants or white bathrooms or blah, blah, blah. We all know that was the case. But a lot of people got to thinking that it was just tradition. It wasn't. It was the law. And so in Montgomery, Alabama, when she refused to sit at the back of the bus driver stopped the bus and called the sheriff's office at a payphone. And a deputy sheriff came to the bus and asked Rosa Parks what in the hell she thought she was doing sitting at the front of the bus when a white man wanted to sit down where she was sitting. And she said something that I think every American, and especially Randy Weaver, said this. Why can't you just leave us alone? And gun owners are saying that this very day. Why can't we just be left alone? Gun shop owners especially are saying it. And people who own and do gun shows are really saying that. And especially when being left alone is guaranteed by the Second Amendment. But no. Politicians, do you think they're going to follow the Constitution? Oh, no. But this is what a constitutional sheriff would have done. He would have got on the bus and said, Ms. Parks, is there a problem here? And she goes, yeah, no problem. I just want to sit where everybody else sits, and I'm sitting here. And the constitutional sheriff says, do you mind if I sit down next to you, Mrs. Parks? She goes, no, sit down. And the sheriff sits down next to her, shakes her hand, and he says, Mrs. Parks, where are you going to get off? And she says, two stops from now on Elm Street. And he goes, well, I'll just sit here next to you. And I'll make sure that you get off the bus safely. And I think I'll walk you home. Do you want to stop by the white restaurant and pick up some hamburgers for your family on the way home? She goes, sure. So they stop in, and he makes sure that she gets a few hamburgers for her family on her way home. And he walks her home. And he says, you know what, Mrs. Parks? I think we're going to make sure that everything's fine in your home. And I want you to know I'm sorry that you got hassled on the bus. Maybe we can change that law. But he says, even if I can't change it, I'm never going to enforce it. And I can proudly tell you that I've never enforced the seatbelt laws the entire time that they were. And it was made a law while I was still sheriff. And I told my deputies not to enforce it, that we won't write any tickets. If you want to stop and ask somebody to buckle up and tell them it's a good idea or make sure that they're buckling up their children, you can stop and tell them that. But we're not writing any tickets for it. And I hope I would have been the constitutional sheriff that would have shook Rosa Parks' hand and make sure she got home safely. And instead of enforcing a stupid law, I would have done what was right, protected her rights.
Well, it's
now today, that's what the constitutional sheriffs need to do. People who've sworn an oath, usually in God's name, that they'll uphold and defend the U.S. Constitution, that they will not allow any statute to be used as an excuse for them to violate their oath of office. And whenever there is a statute that forces them into the quandary of having to choose between keeping their oath or obeying the statute, then their response to such is quick, fast, and firm. I will do that which is constitutional, the laws or statutes notwithstanding. And I'll make no excuses for any violation of the Constitution. The Constitution comes first. It's the supreme law of the land. There you go.
But that's still hard to do if you don't know it.
Well, very true. Very true, Melody. And I'm glad you brought that back up, because you can't do this in ignorance. And so when I started studying as a rookie cop, I'd been on the department about 3 years, and I decided to start studying the Constitution. And I did. And like I said, I got hit over the head with a 2x4. And I realized that what we were doing in law enforcement was wrong and immoral, and that I was going to study the Constitution. And I studied the Bill of Rights, and after all that was said and done, I started reading about the Founding Fathers, and I started studying. And I promised myself during that study that I would never be on the wrong side again. And I've done my utmost best to keep that promise and to keep my oath. And it's not easy, and it hasn't been easy. And I've taken a lot of political heat for it, and I've taken a lot of other heat for it. But, I can look myself in the mirror, and, maybe even more important than looking myself in the mirror, I've been able to look in the eyes of my children and my wife, and who's been with me all this time for 34 years now. I've been married 34 years. Can you believe that?
Well, that's great.
I've been married to one woman the whole time. And this hasn't been easy. We've taken a lot of lumps. And it basically was the reason why I lost my third election as sheriff, and that's all I ever wanted to be. That's all I ever wanted to do was be sheriff. But I got 8 years, I got 2 terms, and, we've moved on and are now doing other things, and it all led to me being able to write and study and having the time to put this book together. And I've written other books, too, and you can see that on my website. But, folks, please let this not be in vain, and that's where you come in. And I said earlier, I'm not trying to get anybody to invest their life savings in some scam. Spend $20, send a piece of silver, get two or three of these books, and see for yourself if I'm not telling the truth. This is probably the most important book that you'll ever read, and right now it is so timely and so vital that we all do our fair share, do our part in making sure that this word gets out there, and that we can train our sheriffs to be constitutional sheriffs and do exactly what I said just a while ago, that we're not going to enforce any more stupid laws, and we're not going to enforce any law that is contrary to the Constitution. And some people say, well, you don't get to pick and choose. That's right, I don't. I have to follow the Constitution. I don't get to pick and choose. I already promised I would follow the Constitution. Well, what about if the Supreme Court says this and this? I said, well, that's really great. The Supreme Court has been wrong on a lot of issues. they used to support segregation. They're the ones that said, okay, Rosa Parks can be arrested. And none of the courts protected her. It would take a sheriff to do that. And I'm not going to allow in my county for one more person to go to jail just because they did didn't register their gun, or they had their gun stored differently in their car, or, oh no, they had a loaded gun in their car? Oh no. Heck, back when I went to school, there's guys that kept shotguns in their trucks right across the back window, racked in there, and they didn't even lock their trucks. Yeah, there was never a problem if somebody kept a gun in their truck. And yet now today, people are going to jail for it. And it's just absurd that we continue to allow such things like that to happen. And the wholesale distribution of radar tickets and photo radar tickets that have nothing to do with a violation of safety, it's immoral. And I'll tell every peace officer and chief of police or highway patrolman in this country, it's immoral what you're doing, just sitting there and writing tickets and taxing people like you are.
Doesn't that end up overriding their, you know, law enforcement or peace, being a peacekeeper as opposed to being a revenue person?
Yeah. Oh, that's all they have become. They're tax collectors. You know, they try to call it safety or, you know, traffic enforcement. Whatever they want to call it, I don't care. That's all you're being used as revenue agents. If you could find a way to make the streets safer but didn't bring in the tickets, do you think that the county would go for it? Do you think the people who are getting all that money would want you to do that? Of course not. They want you to keep doing what you've been doing, and that is bringing in the money. And radar tickets alone bring in close to $7 billion a year in this country. Do you think that the county coffers are not going to want that money to continue to come in? They want it to increase. And if you found a way to reduce accidents that didn't bring in money,
you'd never hear about it.
Want it. You could forget it. The one discussion, the one debate that raged over photo radar tickets and photo radar machines was how much money it would bring in. Not how many accidents it would reduce, how much money it would bring in. And it doesn't matter if it reduces accidents or not. Is it constitutional? That's the question. It doesn't matter. Anything else doesn't matter. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound callous. But it has to pass the Constitution before you can pass anything else. Oh, if it just saves one life, then it's worth it. You know, nothing could be further from the truth. Because if it saves one life, well, then why don't we all just stop driving our cars? We'll save 25,000 lives a year if we'll stop driving our cars. Wouldn't that be worth it if it saves one life?
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty that would love to see that happen.
Oh, sure.
Just create some logistical problems.
The environmentalists would love it. So, no, it just gets to a point where you have to come back down to the basics, and the path is behind us. The solution is behind us. It's not in front of us. It's not Barack Obama. It's not anybody else I've ever seen in Washington, D.C., except Ron Paul. And God bless him, and more power to him. And there's one thing that I've quoted about Ron Paul, and it really gave me the time where I hit my forehead with my palm, like the V8 commercial. I could have had a V8 hit my head. When Ron Paul said, I would abolish the IRS and the federal income tax and replace them with nothing. And everybody, you know, there's people gasping, are you kidding? How would we fund our government? I said, and I always say, yeah, I know. Somebody's got to pay for all that corruption. And it's kind of ridiculous that we think that we need to keep spending all this money in Washington, D.C., because if the federal government would follow its constitutional parameters, we wouldn't need all that money, because they wouldn't be allowed to spend it the way they are. And so, yes, absolutely, abolish the IRS and the federal income tax. Absolutely.
And that's that. I mean, and the way that got put in was rather. And this is the way a lot of the laws are in legislations getting passed these days, is by bending something one way or the other. And it's gotten to the point that it's the bow is so bent now that it's ready to is snapped and broken in a sense. Because we're always bending it. Oh, well, it's okay if you massage it this way and you massage it that way. And before you know it, you don't even recognize what you're dealing with. I mean, when you look at 1,000-page documents like the Patriot Act, and nobody's reading it, and
I know.
And
crazy?
Yeah, and then trying to enforce it, and then we're supposed to know, you know, that we're supposed to be obeying it. Well, I just tried to get a hold of another 1,000-page document recently. Well, the crazy thing's like $200, and yet everybody in the country, in the world, is following this document, and I'm going, well, that really makes a lot of sense. So make it. Put it out of sight, so none of us even see what they're forcing us to abide by.
Well, that's very true, and you know, maybe I make this too simplistic, but I believe the answer is simple. It's not going to be easy to achieve, but the answer still is simple: follow the Constitution. No excuses, no going back, no compromising, follow the Constitution. What if we don't quite understand what the Constitution means? Well then, ask the people who made it. It will take you about 5 minutes to find out what the founders meant about the Second Amendment. There's no question in any research you do about what the Founding Fathers meant and their intent about the Second Amendment, that it'll be completely unambiguous that they intended that to be an individual right of the people. And there's no contradiction in the Second Amendment. When it references the militia were the people. And if you can look up the word militia in most dictionaries, and it'll tell you a militia is comprised of citizen volunteers. And it wasn't the standing army, it wasn't the Continental Army they were talking about. They were talking about the militia. Therefore, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, because the people were the militia. And so,
well, if you make it hard for people to get a hold of ammunition, and they have to go through all these background checks, and you find you keep chipping away at the people that can legally even utilize or have a gun, and you marginalize marginalize the militia. I mean,
exactly. Well, and we've tried to make that a bad word in this country. And the national media, the other M word, the media is the one that tried to demonize the militia, especially after the Oklahoma City bombing. And the truth of the matter was that Timothy McVeigh wasn't a member of a militia. And so they were all lying about that. But, you know, we've been lied to about so many things in this country, and again, that just brings me back to my main point. I don't need to be scared about anything else more than the destruction of my own Constitution. And that scares me plenty. And it has motivated me to the point where I'm not doing this, though, out of fear. I'm doing this out of love and patriotism and that my love for my family and my love for peace. And I know if we follow the Constitution, we'll have peace in this country. And the last part of my book gets pretty powerful. And on the second to the last page, it says, "For the tyrant to win, for the tyrant to be successful, for the despot to have his way, the only thing that has to happen is for the nation's police and sheriffs to be convinced that are destroyed, and America dies when our sheriffs go along with tyranny. Well, Sheriff, the lights in the Old North Church are shining bright with the warning of impending redcoat invasions. Nobody ever said your job would be an easy one. But it only takes two people to restore the constitutional republic, you and me. We can be fair, honest, protectors, servants, and keepers of our oaths as true constitutional guards. We will allow no one within our jurisdictions to violate the Constitution or principles of liberty that our country was founded upon. We will protect, defend, and obey the United States Constitution and mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to this holy cause. So help us God. And then the very last line, freedom is the sure possession of those alone who have the courage to defend it. This book can give you a lot of things. It can give you a lot of tools. It can give you a lot of information. It can even motivate you and touch your heart. But it can't give you courage. You're going to have to find that on your own. And so I'm asking each one of your listeners to have the courage to get involved with this. Go to my website. Invite me to your homes, to your hometowns. Let's do a rally. Let's show your sheriff how many people in your area actually support this. Let's invite him to the rally. And his whole department, invite them all. Invite the chief of police and his officers. And let's have rallies. And let's make this a part of our American heritage in our everyday lives. Let's put the Constitution on our sleeves and back into its proper place. It can happen. And this is, again, this is solution-oriented. This isn't just pontificating. This is solution-oriented. This is action-oriented. It requires the involvement of we the people. And so, folks, go to sheriffmack.com, get involved. You can find my P.O. Box on there. It's P.O. Box 971, Pima, Arizona, 85543. Send me a piece of silver. I'll send you the books. If you want them autographed, I'll do that, too. Allow for some time and maybe a mistake on that or two, because I actually have other people in my family that are trying to get these books out just as fast as we can. And so remember, the important thing is to get this in your hand and then in the hands of your sheriff. And then after you give it to him, tell him, please read it. It'll only take you maybe 20, 30, 40 minutes at the most. And then I'll get back with you and ask you what kind of concerns you have.
One of the things that I kind of wanted to bring out too for some of the people to be aware of is that those that are trying to usurp the Constitution are thinking or are going about trying to get rid of sheriffs.
Well, Connecticut already did. Connecticut voted out the office of the sheriff. And Massachusetts has reduced him to simply a paper server. And there is a concerted effort to reduce the power of the sheriff because, quite frankly, he is the ultimate authority in his county. And other politicians are afraid of that. No question about it. And they've tried to diminish that and change it as much as they possibly can. And it's sad, but the sheriff, if he sits back, he's going to lose more power. And quite frankly, the sheriffs can stop that. And the sheriffs of Connecticut allowed that to happen out there. They allowed themselves to become irrelevant. And it's too bad that has happened. So Connecticut, you're going to have a hard time being part of this, but you still have peace officers there who have sworn the same oath. And so you're going to have to depend on them. And boy, I'd love to do a rally out in Connecticut. There should be people screaming bloody murder out there about all this.
Are you familiar with any of the sheriffs or police departments becoming now like code enforcers for like building codes and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some of that, and it's been a long time since I've actually seen a police officer get involved in that. But some of those zoning enforcers are trying to be peace officers, and if they need the backup, they'll get officers to go there and help them. I personally have never been involved in that, but I do know that police officers have helped with that, yes.
Uh-huh. And where does this sheriff tie in at all with, like, your like fish and game and that sort of thing? Would they still have authority over them, or what?
Would the sheriff have authority over them?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
Anything in his county, he's got the ultimate say. There's some state fishing game, and there's some federal guys who think that they own everything in the county too. But when I was sheriff, we had a bridge washout over in a small town called Solomon, and the Army Corps of Engineers would not allow the county to dredge the river and fix the bridge because they had to do an environmental impact on that, just to put it back the way it was. And the Army Corps of Engineers said that we were not allowed to fix the bridge until they finished with their studies and surveys and everything else that were literally taking years. And so finally the Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to fix the bridge. And the Army Corps of Engineers told them that if they touched that river or the bridge, that they would be subject to arrest and a $50,000 fine for every day that they were in violation. A daily fine of $50,000. Plus, basically committing felonies. And they went ahead and passed the resolution anyway. And then I came to the board in public meeting, which was also put in the front page of the newspaper, that I promised the board that they would be protected, that we would protect all the workers dredging and fixing the river and fixing the bridge, and that if I needed to stand against the Army Corps of Engineers, I would call out the posse. Well, we fixed the bridge. The Army Corps of Engineers went home crying to mama, and we paid not one dime in fines. Nothing. Now, we called their bluff. They tucked tail and ran home. And quite honestly, that's all that would happen with any sheriff doing anything similar. And it's just time that every sheriff in this country did so. I think they need to be much more proactive about making sure that federal agents are not going to intimidate or victimize their citizens.
How about with FEMA?
Same thing. We need to be prepared. I've actually would recommend that sheriffs get people to buy food storage. I personally buy my food storage from Freeze Dry Guy. You can go to on the internet and look him up too. Google Freeze Dry Guy, or I think you can go to www.freezedryguy.com. He's got the best. He's got meats that are out of this world. And in fact, I'm in the middle of ordering some meats right now. And you absolutely have got to have food storage. And if everybody in your county has enough for 3 months' food, then we don't need FEMA coming in here. We need to make sure that we're prepared for any emergencies. If New Orleans would have been prepared, there would have never been a FEMA fiasco or federal fiasco. But the states and the counties need to have their own emergency preparedness plans. And then we don't need to depend on the federal government coming in and ruining everything. They're not good at it anyway. And we should not depend on them for anything. They're not there to take care of us. We're here to take care of ourselves. So a little prior planning would go a long way to prevent these bureaucracies from D.C. running our lives. The EPA has no authority in your county. OSHA has no authority in your county. FEMA sure doesn't. Homeland Security, whatever. They just don't have it. And, you know, you've seen what a marvelous job the federal government has done in protecting our borders. Well, if you want that kind of sloppy, inept and incompetent help in your county, sure, have the federal government come in. But I think the Founding Fathers meant us to be self-sufficient, self-reliant, independent, and autonomous. And, you know, it's up to you to do it. And so I think that people should have guns. I think people should have ammunition stored. And you should have some other emergency preparations for you and your family and your community. And you should absolutely have food stored. And Freeze Dry Guy has, I mean, absolutely the best foods I've ever seen. And I've been doing food storage for about 25 years. And, yeah, I've even thrown some food away that I kept for a while. But these foods store for 30 years. They have a shelf life of 30 years. And that includes the meat. And this meat is fantastic. So, yeah. Go to Freeze Dry Guy, get some food storage going. And
you're not related, are you?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, not yet, but I'll tell you what. If you want steered to the right place, go to him. And
well, I thought, but, you know, I was under the impression that, you know, from some of the programs that I listen to, that, you know, like seeds and things of that sort are really getting in such high demand that there's not a lot of availability. Are you finding that at all, or are you there? Did I lose him? Hmm. Well, let's see. I'll just have to dial him back here just a second here, and I'll put...
Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. Huh, that was weird.
Yeah, we got cut off there for a while.
Yeah.
I thought maybe our 2 hours was up.
No, well, we just got a few more minutes here, so I just wanted to kind of hit some of the highlights as far as, you know, the necessity of people being able to have the guns. And I would have never, ever figured I would have been saying that at this point. I mean, I'm finding myself saying a lot of things that I would have never figured I would have been saying, but I realize now that the importance of why that Second Amendment was put in the Constitution.
Well, it wasn't to go hunting. And I'll be honest with you, I've never really been a gun enthusiast. I don't really know, you know, I have friends that come and start rattling all these things off to me about their guns and giving me all these numbers and grain weights and ammunition and stuff. They may as well be talking about jet airplanes, because I don't know the difference. I could no more tell you the difference of what they were talking about than fly to the moon. I have a few guns, and I enjoy shooting my 9mm, and I now have a .45 pistol, and I have a couple of rifles here and there, and I have some ammunition. And I have my own food storage, and I'm getting more. And I want to be prepared for what's coming, because I just don't think there's any way to avoid a national catastrophe. And I wish there were. But the way things are going, it just doesn't look like that's possible. And again, I would tell people, let's get our Constitution back. And way back during the Revolutionary War, some of the founders were asked, why would we even consider fighting the greatest empire in the world? Why would we take on Great Britain? They have the biggest navy, the biggest army, the best equipment. We're just a new country, small, and hardly even have an army. Why would we expect to win? And people ask me that now, Sheriff Mack. How could we win? The federal government has all the weaponry in the world. How could we expect to win? I said, first of all, this isn't a fight about who has the biggest gun. This is a fight about who is right and who is going to stand firm. answered the question this way. And I will say the same thing. He gave the answer in 6 words. Duty is ours, results are God's. So I would tell this to every listener, and I don't mean for anybody to think that I'm preaching, because I'm not. I am a religious man, but whether you are or not is up to you. I personally find it hard to believe how anybody could believe in America and believe in freedom and really know where liberty comes from and not believe in God. But that's your problem. And that's your choice, because that's what we believe in America. You can be religious or not and still be an American, and we invite everybody to be part of this movement. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care how rich or poor or anything else. If you believe in freedom and you believe in my Constitution, then you're my brother and you're my sister. And I'll gladly hold your hand as we stand together in defense of our country. Well, but John Quincy Adams was right. And so we need to do our duty and leave the rest to the Almighty.
Well, one of the things that people need to understand, too, is the people that are willing to collapse an economy with various versions of made-up monetary system and to create such a vast debt are out to enslave you. And if you're not willing to protect your ability to make a living and to live freely and to have an own property, because that's the next thing coming, is our loss of private property.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of privatization of water that's going to take place, and
yeah.
Some of the rates that some of these places are getting are so prohibitive that we'll be reduced to what a lot of those third world countries deal with in water. Because it will go to the highest bidder, and the highest bidder will be your commercial aspects.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to think about. But as I said, I really like to keep this simple. I believe in the KISS philosophy: keep it simple, stupid. And the book is based on that philosophy. It's simple to read. It's simple to understand. It's a simple message. Very powerful. Very well documented, and even alarming in some ways. But at the same time, it's very powerful. Probably the best $20, $25, $30 you'll ever spend. And again, I prefer silver, but folks, it's time to get involved. We've got to step up to the plate. We can't be cheering for the team here. We've got to get involved.
Well, and it, you know, and pass these things out to where the, you know, there's people can, you know, like you said, and not just your sheriff, but your police departments and and other people being aware that, you know, the sheriff is the highest authority in the county, and then get people, you know, back to, you know, being aware of what's in our Constitution, so that we do have something to understand what we need to cherish and protect. Because if it's gone, I doubt we'll ever see one of those again.
Yeah. And it's getting really close to the point of no return. It's almost too late. I believe we still have some time left, and regardless, it goes back to that point. It doesn't matter what you and I think, it matters what our duty is. And it's time to do our duty. Just do your duty and leave the results to God. And that's how I feel. That's what I believe. That is the truth. And so we don't get involved in the fight only if we know we can win. That has never been the purpose of the fight. The purpose is to stand and do our duty. And then miracles will happen, just like the original Revolutionary War. That was a miracle. We should have never won that war. But there was some inspiration and some real leadership and some courage, and that's all we need today.
Well, Sheriff Mack, I appreciate you coming on our program and educating our my audience with your information, and I hope that it will have made a difference with people in my community. And again, I want to thank you, and I hope you continue to get more and more people interested in this, so that it really takes on a life of its own.
Well, it seems like it has, and I really appreciate being on your show, and I appreciate the time, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing from you in the future. I have your emails, and you have mine, and anybody can get to my website and still get my email. And so, folks, go to sheriffmack.com, and we'll see you soon.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.